From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Good Games Hobart and their new Endgame Cafe.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Goodness, it is 156th episode. It is The Dice Men Cometh. Now, Mark.
Yes, Garth.
I hear you like beer.
I love beer. Well,
let me tell you, we are tonight sponsored by Good Games in Hobart and their new Endgame Cafe, which is Hobart's only licensed board gaming, tabletop gaming venue.
So fantastic.
Isn't that exciting?
You can get your beer on while you get your game on.
Exactly right. So that is very, very exciting. But what is also very exciting is what we are talking about this week, Mark.
We are going to be talking about a couple of games we've been playing. We're probably going to talk quite a bit about that.
Yes.
And then, Garth, you attended a convention.
I did.
A different style convention on the weekend.
Thank you.
I like a little frilly hand thing you just did when you said different style. I don't know what that was.
Yeah, we're going to talk a bit about that.
Well, of course we are.
And lots of games that we've been playing.
Definitely. So how about we throw to a song, we get everything kick-started off, then you can come back and talk about one of these games that unfortunately or fortunately we have been playing this week.
Well, that was weird. That was Spy by They Might Be Giants on Edge Radio 99.3 FM in The Dice Men Cometh. This week brought to you by Good Games and the Endgame Cafe, where there is plenty of in-store gaming space and they regularly host events and gathering. Now, lads, what have you been playing without me while I had the plague?
Oh, we've been playing an awesome game, Leon. At least I think so. But we'll get to that in a little while, won't we, Garth? Because we are talking about Covert, or Covert, as I like to call it.
No.
By Kane Klenko.
That's not how words work.
From Renegade Games, came out last year, 45 to 90 minutes.
What?
2 to 4 players. We played it with 3. Now, for those of you who don't know, Kane Klenko, he's a US-based designer from Wisconsin. I must admit, I hadn't heard of him before.
Really?
But he's come out with Mad City and Pressure Cooker, which were two real-time games in 2014. 2015, he had Dead Men Tell No Tales, which was a parody game.
Yeah, I've wanted to play that.
And another real-time game called Fuse. And then last year, Covert came out at Gen Con, was a big hit at Gen Con. There's been a lot of talk about it since then. There was even a Kane K promo card released at Gen Con as one of the characters.
Now, he's a little bit bit into himself, isn't he?
A little bit. Releasing all those games with all that talent.
With good reason. And this game is produced by Renegade Games. Now, again, this was a name that didn't mean a lot to me, but it was a game studio founded in 2014 by Scott Gaeter. Now, you may have heard him before. He's a former game store owner. He worked for a couple of CCG-type companies, producing things like Lord of the Rings, CCGs, Star Wars and Star Trek CCGs. Then he worked for Upper Deck and he helped produce the Versus game system that had DC and Marvel and World of Warcraft and a whole bunch of other things. And then, he's been a busy man, he then co-founded Cryptozoic Entertainment, who, of course, do the amazing DC deck builder that I love so much. And again, a whole bunch of other card and board games they've done, a few tie-ins to licensed properties. Then he thought he'd go out on his own, and he's founded Renegade Games with his mission to bring hobby-quality games to the masses. Now, some of the games they've produced, Gravwell, Lanterns, Clank, World's Fair 1893. Now, they're not exactly games that come to mind for me, for like sort of like your mass market games.
No, although Clank has been getting a lot of publicity lately.
And Gravwell was a bit of a thing there for a while.
Yeah. Anyway, look, there's a bit of background about Renegade Games. So
either the guy's a really big overachiever or he just can't keep a job.
I just hope his wife's name is Ali.
Alligator.
Yeah,
that's
the extent of my interest.
So Covert, it's a dice worker placement game with action selection. It's got the classic multi-use cards, so cards that can be used for multiple things. And you're collecting you're sort of collecting sets, but it's inspired by the Cold War, where you are competing spy agencies or spy agents, however you want to look at it, traveling across Europe, completing espionage missions to be the best spy.
To get the most Cold War points.
That's right. And each character, there's a character has like a rule breaker, so they each have a special ability. And so you're completing missions. Now, to do so, you need to collect equipment like shoe phones and weapons and lockpicks and passports and credit cards and things like that. And you get those equipment from agency cards, which is one way, mm-hmm. but also from cracking codes. And look, this was one of the first things I really liked about this game. It's so thematic. You've got these two rows of numbers randomly assorted, basically two of each number from 1 to 6. They randomly come out, and you have these little cards. You start with two of them, and you draw more throughout the game that have three numbers. So your code is like 1, 2, 3 or 4, 5, 6. And so I mentioned this is a dice worker placement. So one of the places you can put your dice is next to the code cracking code row place.
Yes, and the cipher.
That's right. Maybe. And that that allows you to, on your turn, manipulate two numbers. So you can swap two numbers that are adjacent. And then you can put any of the dice you put next to there, you put that on top of a number, and that element of the code takes on the number that's on the die.
Yes.
So you've sort of got two ways you can try and crack the code.
Yeah, and look, I did like that part of the game because that is completely in the sense of spying and secrecy stuff, and it does give you a little bit of a benefit because you then get to use one of the abilities on your card, which is basically a free piece of information, be it a shoe phone or a gun.
Yeah, it gives you some equipment.
A completely odd credit card that has a chip in it, technology is only very recent and you're playing in the Cold War.
I think it's actually a passport, or I think it represents documents.
Yeah, well, since I wasn't actually there to play it, but I have seen pictures of this game, and that little code sequence, from it looks like it when it's on the table, it does the thing that catches your eye, just like, what's that? What's going on here?
Yeah, exactly.
And I also love the element of it where, because you're going in turn order, you might be lined up and think, yeah, all I need to do is switch those two numbers and I've got it. And then, of course, the person who goes before you switches two numbers and completely stuffs you up. And it's just like some wacky Cold War movie where you've lined up your sting to go in and crack open some safe. And, of course, as you get there, there's some other bumbling fool in front of you who's set off the alarm and you can't go and access it. I really like that.
Yeah, I like that bit.
Anyway,
let's keep going.
Let's move on.
Let's keep going.
Foreshadowing.
Now, there's also a geographic element to the game. So there's a map, and your agent meeples with little spy hats can travel to new areas of the board because you need to be in certain areas to access certain missions. So the mission might say you have to have a person in a region, or it might even say you have to have an agent in a particular city. So you can move across the board. That's one of the actions you can do, is move. And as you move, you leave intelligence behind you about where you've been. Again, thematically, this fits really nicely, except you just drop, it's like you poop a cube as you move across the board.
And the whole point of being a spy is to not be releasing intelligence willy-nilly, surely.
Well,
so just the fact that you've driven through Vienna, here's my little bit of poop intelligence that I'm leaving. Yeah, I don't know whether you'd be a good spy by doing that.
Well, you know, it is the 50s. It's not really high tech, except for those chips in the credit cards. But the great thing about picking up the intelligence, the spy poop, is when you've got two of the same colour, you give those back to that person who has the colour, and basically that lets you get another agency card. So it's a way to turn in to get extra cards. As I mentioned, the agency card, they have three things on them. So they have a sort of a special ability, and I'll talk about those more in a minute. They have a location, normally a city, and then they have a piece of equipment. So at any stage you can trade it in to use one of those three things.
Yeah, now just go back a bit to the map. It's sort of very pandemic-y, I guess, in the layout, but it's all about Western Europe. But you can only move one space per die. But one of the things that there is that for every die you commit to the agent movement track, each of your workers gets to move one space. So you're not just moving one worker very, very slowly through Western Europe. You can, on every single die that you place there, move all three of your workers, which allows there to be a constantly dynamic change in the Western Europe spy structure. I think the world map, though, or the Western European map, the colours are a bit off. There's a lot of colours where I don't think it's as clear as it should be.
Yeah, it's a bit tricky between green and grey, and there's a yellow and orange.
Yeah, and
oh, there's a grey. I can't even see that.
Yeah, so in the map where the town horrible. Or the colour of which part of Europe we're in is so crucial, I think they really could have done a bit of a better job with just making it really, really clear. Because, there were certainly a couple of instances where we all had to stand up off our chairs and look really, really closely, which is not what you want to do, because you want to be a little bit sneaky to go, well, I've got to do this. You're telegraphing what your move is.
Yeah, well, I can see a picture from the board now on a monitor less than a metre away. And until you said there's grey, I just thought there was one big green section.
Yeah.
And then, oh, it's grey and green right next to each other. Yeah. That's clever, isn't it?
And orange and red is a bit.
And there
like
was
that.
Orange and red. I just saw that then.
Yeah.
I just thought that was a big old orange splodge.
Yeah, exactly. And another thing that's really interesting about this board is that it either comes as a single or double board. Is that right, Mark?
Yes, so Trent now does have a modular board. It wasn't intended to be that way, but unfortunately the bit of paper that sort of stuck over where the two parts of the board fold wasn't incredibly strong, so I guess we could really mix up Europe by having it sort of back the front.
Sorry, Trent.
Sorry about that, Trent. Look, one point on the board before I move on to the dice spaces. I did think there's lots and lots of cities, and because sometimes you got to get from one colour to another, I think they maybe could have even had just one or two spots per colour. But then again, you've got three agents, so I guess you can move around a bit. I'm not 100% on the board element, but let me continue. So the bit that I did really, really love about this game is the dice placement mechanic. So I mentioned you can use dice to activate the cipher.
Yes.
The code cracking. You've got another area which is just like a throwaway spot where if you can't do anything else with your dice, you get to access what are those tokens called? The tokens.
The tokens.
The special ops tokens, that's what they are. And all the special ops tokens are like rule breakers, one-off special abilities, the same special abilities actually that are one of the three things on the agency cards. And they could be really powerful. So one of them, for example, was, well, I might be third in the turn order, but I'm going to play this token and I will actually get to go first.
And I'm really sure that there's about 99% of the tokens in the bag that are that. Because I think Mark went into the bag maybe three times and every time it was that, oh, I get to go first token.
It was, and that particularly was a very powerful. But then on the other hand, you've got one token which lets you add a number to a die, and then you've got another token which lets you subtract a number to a die. And I thought, why wouldn't you just have one token that has plus or minus to give you a lot more flexibility?
Yeah.
But look, the tokens are fun. You get to pull them out of a bag. It's always fun to pull tokens out of a bag. But the main thing that you're doing with your dice is you've got four choices across the top of the board, where one is to move your agents, the second one is to draw agency cards, the third one is to draw mission cards, and then the fourth one is to complete a mission. What these have is they have little squares and the numbers 1 to 6 around in a circle in order. So what you do is you place a die that matches the number. Then the person who goes next, they can only go in the adjacent spot. So if I put down a 3, the next person who wants to place on that dial can only place a 2 or a 4. And I saw that's where there was a lot of byplay where we were looking at, okay, what dice has Garth got left? How can I place where I want to go, but also screw him around and give him less options as to where he could place his dice?
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
Theoretically, I like the sound of that.
I thought it was really clever. And so those are the main things you're doing. So you're collecting agency cards, turning your cipher cards into equipment. Those two things plus the people on the board are combining together to complete missions, and you're handing your missions. When you solve a mission, the missions are worth varying amounts of point, and also some missions gave you Like an extra ability.
Just a permanent bonus, yeah, really, like wasn't it?
That's right. A permanent gun or a permanent being in a green country or something for the rest of your solving missions, which was quite handy. So, look, as I said, a couple of little wrinkles, I thought. The tokens, some of them were not as powerful as the others. The geographic element, I thought, was a little bit curious. It didn't quite work, but I love the idea of, like, moving around through Europe on spy missions. Yeah, the cubes are a bit fiddly, but I also like this here that you're tracking other spies around Europe and getting information from them. Thematically, it fits. I'm not so sure about mechanically.
Sure.
Oh, look, I really enjoyed this game. Spoiler alert, I won. But I do have to say, I didn't just enjoy it because I won. I liked how the theme and the mechanics worked together. And I did feel like at the start of the game, it did feel a bit mishmashy, like it was a mishmash of different mechanics. But the more I got into the game, the more thematically they made sense for me.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point because there is so much going on in this game. You've got the dice placement, you've got the worker placement, you've got the worker moving around, you've got the cipher, you've got the mission cards, you've got the agency cards, you've got the, oh, I'm just going to draw some intelligence out of a bag because I've got nothing better to do. You've also got the player interaction, you've got the special abilities that each player has, you've got the special abilities that you might gain by completing separate missions. I feel it just tries to put too much into what is trying to sell itself as a 45 to 90 minute game. I think you could probably strip out a few of those components without really impacting the experience. I think the cipher, as cool as it is, feels a bit like the map portion in Android.
Yeah,
where it's there in that top right corner. And it sometimes is useful and sometimes it isn't, but it's just another thing that is probably not really required from a gameplay point of view.
It's kind of like how we talked about Islebound recently, and in that game you can collect wood and fish, but there's only really one use for them, and you can go the whole game with just not even bothering about that whatsoever.
Exactly. I think the component quality is not that great. You know, when we both looked at this game and Trent put it out on the table...
And Mark ripped the board in half.
Yeah, Mark ripped the board in half, and like Mark, like he's a big guy, but he's really... weak, so
he's got a very girly tuck.
But
so I've been told.
It looked similar to a whole bunch of Kickstarters that have just funded, so they haven't had the extra funding to be able to upgrade component quality. It looks cheap.
Yeah, I sort of thought straight away when I saw it that it must have been a Kickstarter. Yeah. So I wasn't aware of the Gen Con launch, and I agree. Like, you know, the tokens, the fact that you had the tokens and then you also had those same abilities on cards. Do you need both? But then again, having a spot to throw away dice, because you can get really dice hosed where you can't get on a dial. So it is good to have a spot where at least your dice don't completely get wasted. And then the other thing I didn't mention is how you've got the turn order. And so basically, when you run out of dice, you pick up a token and there's two or three or four tokens, depending on if you're playing with two or three or four. But you do have the choice to forego putting a dice down, so hold one back, and pick up a token if you want to get ahead in the turn order. And that was fun because it was really that thing of, well, do I need to get ahead in the turn order? Can I afford to waste one die? But it was another interesting decision. And I guess for me what I saw was this game, I'm not saying it's the perfect game, but for me it's almost the perfect weight, where you have to think a bit ahead. One, maybe you're thinking 1.5 turns ahead. That's about all my brain can handle. And once I get to a game where I've got to be thinking 4 or 5 turns ahead, I just switch off because I'm just not going to do that. It's not fun for me.
Yeah, and really I think the main point is you're thinking, how can I maximise the was it 5 dice that you've rolled and get them on the spaces that I need them to be able to move, get the card I need to be able to complete the mission I need, and then do something else.
Yeah, and
as well.
What bits do I have left over from last turn that I couldn't quite do?
So look,
and then set up maybe the first half of the next turn.
Exactly. Look, I'd certainly play it again with my arm twisted behind my back just to give it another crack, but I spent the last little bit of this game not particularly enjoying it. It certainly outlived its welcome for me. It didn't play in 90 minutes. But hey, that's a Dice Man thing, not a game thing.
It's very much out there.
Yeah, I agree.
So anyway, we'll cut to a song. You are listening to The Dice Man Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3.
Well, thematically speaking, that was right in there. That was Morse Code for the Cold War by Dieter Schmidt. You're with Edge Radio 99.3 FM. We are The Dice Man Cometh, and we are proudly sponsored by Good Games Hobart, who have an expansive range of board games, card games, miniature and traditional games. They have what any gamer is looking for, and if they don't have it in, they will go the extra mile to get it in for you.
Lovely.
Leon.
Right.
Your turn, mate.
My turn?
Yeah.
All right.
What have you been playing this week?
I've been playing Sick in Bed.
Yay. How's that going?
Playing the PlayStation.
So you've been playing a solo then?
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Horizon, which is brilliant. Right. So, yes, games. Okay. Santorini is an island in the southern Aegean Sea, about 200 kilometres, 120 miles, southeast of Greece.
It is.
Isn't that nice?
It's beautiful as well, just in case you've not been there. Yeah. It's really, really nice.
That's it. That's all I've got.
Okay, excellent.
I've just been Googling that. I just thought it was nice. No!
It's Leon's not travelogue.
Don't be ridiculous. So Santorini is a 2-to-3-player strategy board game. It was first released in 2004 by Gordon Hamilton, who happens to have a doctorate in mathematics, much like the good doctor Reiner Knizia.
Oh, there you go.
Who we may mention at some point during the show, depending on where I put it in the edit. And he's a designer as well as a mathematician, and his students call him Dr. Pickle.
Really?
Is that allowed?
Well, apparently so.
Okay.
Either way, he started his creative juices when he was age 9, designing new custom abilities for the original Cosmic Encounter.
Ooh.
So it's not like
9.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't published, but that's how he went about designing it. And I actually watched a video with him, which I put up on our Facebook page.
Yep.
And he talked about how if you want to become a designer, people go, oh, but it's so hard to be creative. Find something you really love and just see if you can make something to go into it.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And new abilities in Cosmic Encounter, that's a great way to start.
Well,
although they've probably done them all by now.
Yeah, there's about 8 expansions of those. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Bit. So in 2004, when he brought out this game, it's pretty much looks like your bog-standard abstract game. There were wooden pieces. They were all painted white. They all looked the same, except they were slightly different sizes. And I think it came out and everyone kind of went, yeah, and then it kind of went away. But also, remember, 2004, gaming wasn't where it is now.
Correct.
So a lot has happened in the last 13 years.
All,
so,
all those B-movie games for a start.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, forgot about that. Anywho, so cut to 2016, and Roxley Games, a Canadian company, they got their hands on the license for Santorini after talking to Mr. Gordon. So they Dr. Pickle himself.
Please.
So they put it up on Kickstarter, and it was actually a record-breaking Kickstarter, although I could not find what the record it broke was. And since they declined, I do believe, since they're a Canadian company, I'm assuming it is the highest Canadian board game amount of money that's been raised, because it raised $700,000 Canadian.
Yeah, wow.
And they were only looking for a pledge level of $85,000, so that's not too bad. So over 7,000 backers. Yeah. But the thing I noticed about this as well, that after the game was originally funded, so after they got to the 85,000 mark, they hit this. After that, they had stretch goals set for every 3,000.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to bring out new cards and whatever else. Geez. But by the end of that, like I said, they went up to 700,000. They were doing it every 15,000 until they released the new Kickstarter, which says to me that they thought, yeah, this is going to do well, but it's not going to do gangbusters, which it clearly has.
Yep.
So that's awesome. So the tagline for this game is learn in 30 seconds, play it for life, which I think is pretty apt once we get into it.
Yeah.
So it's a thematic game. Pure strategy experience featuring beautiful little minis, game-altering player powers, and a 3D board, which is absolutely brilliant. I've got the physical copy that I bought after we played it on Tabletopia.
Yeah, Tabletopia, yeah.
Which we then played again last night on Tabletopia. But the actual physical thing itself is something to behold. It's really, really nice.
Yeah.
And I think anybody that sees that in a store anywhere is going to go, ooh. Because it's like a little cardboard. A cardboard square that has like a nice, like a beach seafront type thing on it. And then you put in the middle this big plastic thing that stands about 2 inches off the table, which is like a rocky cliff face. And then you put the board on top of that. And it's like that's like a diamond shape that's on top of the square thing. And oh, it's a whole thing. And it looks brilliant. So it's a, so it's a 5x5 grid. Each person gets 2 workers, a man and a woman worker, which I thought was a nice touch.
Yes.
They each get 1 special god power, which I will talk about in a minute. And the way the game works is just this simple. On your turn, you can move one of your workers 1 space in any direction that you feel you want to, wherever you want to on the board. And then you will build a building piece. And there's 3 different layers of building pieces. There's 1, 2, and 3. Obviously, you need to build the first one, then the second one, then the third one. The characters that you move around the board, you can only go up 1 level at a time. So you could go up to level 1, then next turn level 2, but if you wanted to go back down, you can go all the way down to the bottom. And the way you win this game is to get one of your workers standing on a level 3 tower.
Which is why they all have roofs or domes, as well as the fourth bit, which is the screw you piece in this board game.
Exactly. You can put a fourth piece onto a tower, a little blue dome, and the reason those little blue domes is it's actually a signature architecture feature of the Santorini region.
It sure is.
Look at me doing research and whatnot.
And it looks really sweet too, I must admit. You know, traditionally, I've got to say, I don't like abstract games. I don't like them at all.
But that's why this game is so good, because it don't look like no abstract game.
Yeah, at all.
It looks like...
It's like a city building game.
People have gone, you know how abstract games have... They're all mechanics, and they're all really good mechanics half the time, but they look like...
Yeah.
They look like a game you could walk past... Yeah, they look like a game you could walk past somebody playing on a park table and go not think twice about it.
Well, this one, I think I mentioned the first time we played it on Tabletopia... I said it reminded me very much of Torres, which is another one of those old Euros probably from about, my guess would be 2005, 2006.
Pretty old.
Where you're stacking up what I like to call pizza tables. You know those things they put in a pizza box to keep the lid off the toppings?
Yep.
The bits look like that, and you're basically stacking them up, and you've got a fistful of cards that you use to change stuff around.
Yep.
Oh, wow. It's actually, there you go. Gus has pulled it up on the screen. It's 1999, that one.
Whoa.
You can see the pictures. They look like the pizza tables.
Yep.
And to me, I know a friend of the show, Carl, loves that one. To me, it is dull, 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 dull.
So, yeah. So, anyway, so I said before about the special god powers that you can have. So, each person gets assigned one of them. In the base box, there is 30 of them, which is insane. And I should also mention, I just explained how the game's played. You literally need no more rules than what I just explained. And then the game takes however long it takes, 5 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. So between those gods, 10 of them are really, really basic. They do simple things like one of your guys can move twice in a turn, or one of your guys can place 2 buildings in a turn, and then that's it. And then there's 20 more gods after that that still aren't difficult. They're just a little bit more complicated.
Yeah.
And some of them are a bit more of the screw you, like you can put a dome onto any building, even if it's a level 1, which is just a douchebag move, and other stuff like that. So this game is actually designed as a 2-player game, and I can see why. As a 2-player game, it moves pretty well. A 3-player game, it gets a little bit crowded, but that's fine. It still plays pretty nicely as a 3-player game. As a 4-player game, you take teams, each person. It becomes like a 2-player game, but you each get a person each, and you can even play with a variant where you each get a god each. So you've got your own little worker. So I take the female one, you take the male one. I've got a god power, you've got a god power.
Cool.
And then you kind of go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So the variety of this game is through the roof. You can play it a bajillion different times with a dealing different combinations. And it's a great game, I think, for families to get their hands on, especially for younger kids, because it teaches them, I mean, there might be a bit, you know, stop screwing me over so much, which is not good. But learning just the simple, like I said, the really simple mechanics and the cognitive thinking of if I do this, then they're going to do this.
Yeah, and what I like about it is that even in the rule book, it says just play the game with no god powers to get you started the first couple of times. And that's where you'd probably start with your kids.
Yeah, just
play the basic. Yep. You will move one worker. You can then place a building in any of the 8 squares around the worker. First one to level 3. Go.
Yeah.
That's it.
Because if you notice, as I said before, about the actual board itself looking nice, but the box art on this game, as well as the art on the god cards, is amazing.
Yeah,
it's like it's really kiddie and really. It looks like a Pixar, kind of like what Hop was.
Mm.
It kind of looks like a Pixar film in a box. And also, there's another little expansion coming out for it soon that was actually in the Kickstarter version. So if you've got the Kickstarter version, you've got this already. It's called Golden Fleece. You get 15 more gods, so that takes out up to 45.
Oh, man.
So, like I said, the replay of this game is amazing. And it's not that expensive for how nice it looks,
sure,
which is pretty cool. And then you get 10 heroes. What these heroes are, they're similar to the gods, except you can only use them once per game. So instead of having an ability all the time, you can only use them once. Mm-hmm. So a different variant. As well as, you get your hands on the Golden Fleece, which is a little golden ram token, which looks pretty cool. And somebody gets to place that somewhere on the board. And then what you do is you assign a god power to that statue. And so nobody else that's playing the game has a power, but if you stand adjacent to that statue, then you get to use the power.
Yep.
So both players, if they stood adjacent to it, could use the same god power, standing close to that statue, which I think is a really cool idea. I love games that have simple variants that you kind of go, would you like to play with that? And you kind of go, yeah. Whereas most of them you go, if you want to play with that, we're going to have to set up all this stuff and it changes the whole way of the game. It's like, use it if you want. If you don't,
exactly. And what I love about it is it's all done and dusted in about 15 to 20 minutes, absolute max.
Yeah.
It'll go for 10 minutes to 20 minutes at the most.
Yeah.
I also think it is pretty impressive how different the games play, and it's all based on which god powers are chosen.
Yes.
So Leon and I had a couple of games last night where we chose two completely different gods and a couple of random ones, and the first game we played was just absolutely different to the second one because of the god powers, and it was brilliant. I thought that was so much fun for what is a relatively little game.
And a game with such simple mechanics, but two games in a row were completely different dynamics.
Yeah.
I mean, there was still lots of swearing, no matter what you do. But like the one that we played, which is something that I actually would probably recommend that if anybody plays this on Tabletopia or in they get their hands on it, to try, is that, as I said before, there was one god that lets you move a player two spaces in a turn. So I had that one, and then Garth had a player that, instead of getting to build one bit of building, they get to build two.
Yeah.
And they matched perfectly, those two abilities.
Yeah.
And they played off each other so well. And they're two of the standard, like, you know, starter 10 gods. And as I just said, if you get the Golden Fleece, you've got 45. If you've got the base game, you've got 30.
Yeah.
And if you had a younger kid that was into this, and especially if you wanted to use it trying to teach them to learn strategy and thinking ahead and stuff like that, you wouldn't really need much else.
No. Look, it's a great little game.
I was going to say, the other thing I liked, and I guess it's not so much this game, but this game on Tabletopia, isn't that just about the perfect combination? Because my frustration with Tabletopia was the first time I played it was dragging little bits around and tokens and counters and stuff, and I did get frustrated with it. Whereas this one, you know, you're just picking up your pieces and putting it down. It was really simple. So if there's anyone who wants to give Tabletopia a try, Santorini is the perfect game to give it a try with, that's for sure.
Yeah,
and obviously you only need two people.
Yeah, and this game has skyrocketed in terms of popularity. I mean, as soon as it's released, it is now, looking at it, the number two abstract game of all time, the number three family game of all time on BGG. So we were speaking about Gloomhaven last week or the week before and how popular it's become in no time. Yeah. This is right up there as well.
Yeah, the week this came out from the Kickstarter release, my Facebook feed of all the different board game groups I'm a part of, there was the amount of pictures of them, and on Instagram everyone had a picture of this. And the amount of people going, does anyone have the Kickstarter version of Santorini? Really want? I was one of those people, and luckily I got my hands on a copy, not the Kickstarter version, just the base one, but that was good enough for me. And as I said, the price wise it's she's spot on.
We'll be back to talk more gaming in just a minute.
Hey guys,
what?
You will never believe what I found out last night. I was doing some research on the Dark Geek.
The who now?
The Dark Geek. Don't you know about it?
No.
Are you being racist?
No.
Again?
No. Because I'm old and I've been a member of Board Game Geek for such a long time, I get secret access to the Dark Geek. It's like the dark web, just for board games. What I read was David Harding from Grail Games.
We love him!
He's got some dirt on Rainer Knizia.
Not the good doctor, surely.
Which is
not
how this tiny little game studio in Australia keeps getting this access to, like, brand new Rainer Knizia games that no one else in the world can get.
Well, hey, what do you mean keeps getting access? Because I know Grail Games redid Medici a little while ago.
Yeah,
but
haven't you seen their new Kickstarter?
No!
King's Road.
Never heard of it.
It's a re-release, a re-implementation of Imperium, and it funded in less than 2 days.
Oh, Imperium by Rainer Knizia.
Yes.
I remember that. That was the one where players and nobles attempting to gain power and influence within the king's many provinces, and as the king travels along the road, they connect all the major landmarks within the territory, and then that'll allow the most influential noble in each region to govern in his stead, and over time the most favoured noble will win the game.
No, that's King's Road you just described there.
Oh.
Anyway, so what happens is Rainer Knizia gets locked away in David Harding's, I was going to say dungeon, it may well be, for about a month at a time to produce these games so that David Harding doesn't come out and leak the dark secret about him. Do you want to know what it is?
All right.
Let's ask him. When we see him next.
Oh, right, cool. And we ask him about all his great games.
Well, he's got some amazing games. And did you know you can buy them off his website?
A website. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, he's got a website. He's got his great Mike line.
Yes.
He's got the good doctor's Medici. But you know what I think? I think we should send him a secret message because he wanted to do a promo code. I think we should make the promo code Willice Wiener.
Willice
Wiener. Willice Wiener.
Willice Wiener. With an R.
With
a... R-E-L-E-A-S-E-R-E-I-N-E-R. Willice Wiener. But it just sounds funnier when you say Willice Wiener.
So if we were to put this onto this so-called website, what do you think is going to come out of it?
Apart from getting Wiener released, we might get 15% off.
15% off?
Yeah. And they've already great prices, and you get free shipping if you spend over $100 Australian. Yeah, so in other words, you only have to actually spend $85 to get the $100 free shipping with the Willice Wiener promo code.
Willice Wiener.
Yeah, release, promo code.
Willice Wiener.
That's him. Yes, Willice Wiener!
Okay, so, to recap, go to growlgamesshop.com.au,
yes.
Promo code Willice Wiener.
Yes.
You'll get 15% off, plus the free shipping if you order stuff over...
$100?
And get yourself onto Kickstarter to back Rainer Canizia's update of Imperium King's Road.
Absolutely right.
And while you're there on growlgamesshop.com.au, you can pre-order... their last Kickstarter, Donut Drive-Thru.
And who doesn't love a game about donuts?
Who doesn't love donuts?
Donuts.
It's the latest in that sort of Japanese-y, arty...
Yeah, that little mic line.
Growl Games. We love them.
Willice Wiener!
Well, and hopefully the street cafe, the road that it takes you to, will be 44 to 46 Brisbane Street in Hobart, because, of course... we are the Dice Men. This is Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and we are sponsored by not only Good Games Hobart, but their Endgame Cafe, which has their grand opening this Saturday, 11th of March, at 11 a.m, so it's easy to remember. They also have the grand reopening of their game store, because the game store moved next door, and then the cafe opened in the space that was the game store. So we're going to be there sometime during the day. Hopefully we'll see a few of you there.
And we went there today and had a pizza and a brew before the show, and it was lovely.
It was good too.
Yes, yes, it was. We all forgot about our job. My turn?
Pizza.
Yes, your turn to talk. Our transitions this week are spot on.
Yeah, they are smooth and silky smooth. So yeah, look, I did something that I've not done before.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
Should we be talking about this on the air?
Well, we'll talk about other things off air. But okay. I went to AICon, which is something that we briefly mentioned in last week's show. It's Tasmania's largest pop culture festival, which is all about video games and board games and cosplay and
anime. It's a massive anime thing.
Yeah. And look, I took my kids there, and Trent went with his daughter Pearl as well, and we went and had a look around. I thought I wanted to have a bit of a chat about this, because I'd not been before, and I was really, really impressed with it, and I just wanted to share that with you, because you guys couldn't be asked going, so I thought, you know what, I'll do the hard work.
I was going
to
go, but nobody sent me a message saying, Leon, do you want to come?
I was working, Gar. Some of us got to work.
Yeah, whatever.
Although I did check out the... some of the photos on Facebook, because they do have a big cosplay presence.
Yes.
You know I like me some cosplay.
You do indeed, yes. Don't know why you're wearing it right now, but anyway, that's just whatever floats your boat. So look,
Chun Li, isn't it?
Old white men liking cosplay. Who'd have thunk it?
I know. So look, before we get to the cosplay side of things, because I did sit into my first ever cosplay competition and watch the people who got awarded prizes. Ooh. which was really impressive. They did a great job. But look, we went in there, everyone was really welcoming, and we got our badges and we went in and had a stroll. And immediately it was great to see how many people were dressed up and were making the effort into this, because clearly there is a thriving community of cosplayers and anime fans and board gamers and video gamers in this little island of ours, which is great. Because you had to squeeze past people. Ooh. It was really, really, really popular. There are a couple of big retailers there selling their wares, be it, you know, manga comics or board games or T-shirts or a whole bunch of Pokemon stuff and face painting and photos and all of that kind of thing, which was really, really cool.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, was there a large games presence? Because I've always pictured it as... the manga, anime, cosplay, video games, mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know whether that like people would be sitting around playing board and card games, were they?
Yeah, they were. So what I liked is it was played out over two levels in the convention centre there. The top floor, which is also the floor where it has the main theatrettes where they had talks like Goose was there from Good Games and they did the cosplay competitions and a few other events in there. But then in the lower section, there were some other retailers and that's where they had the tabletop gaming area as well as the video game area and then also a whole bunch of learn to play areas, which I thought was really fantastic. So you could go there and guys, I did this, learn magic.
Oh, wow.
It's only taken you, what, 45 years?
Yeah. Now, I didn't learn, but I sat there while my son and Pearl, they went and had a game of magic. So there was a guy there who was an official magic judge because, you know, we know Morgan who's worked in a few other game shops but has also been on this show.
Yep.
She's a magic judge. She was there on the Saturday. We were there on the Sunday. And we had this lovely bloke who walked Pearl and my son Finn through a game of magic.
Wow.
And at the end of it, they got their own little box of cards so that they could go and play.
Ka-ching!
They got a couple of discount vouchers so they could potentially go and buy booster packs that we then quickly went and cashed in and bought some booster packs.
Oh, you could just feel your wallet getting lighter by the second, man. Didn't you?
But what I really enjoyed is that both the kids had a great time learning it. Yeah. You know, one of the things I find sometimes a little bit of a roadblock in teaching my kids games is that it's a bit hit and miss whether they're going to actually be bothered to learn the rules. And something like magic, you could go, oh, my God, I'm not going to really do too much, have much success with that. But the good thing is at its core, it's a pretty simple system.
It's just those cards. I mean, literally since the game came, I mean, in the mid-90s, the art on those cards was very mid-90s at the time, but now the art on them is just second to none. I know people like that I work with that are not gamers, not anything, and they still have like a deck of magic cards from like 20 years ago because like, yeah, I walked past it in a store and like they saw these cards that had nice art and now I have them for some reason.
So that was great. And we then, you know, then went home and Finn created two decks out of the 60 cards that he got and we had a couple of games and it was brilliant.
When I first got into gaming and got into magic, that's what did me in for so long. I'm a big person of creating anything, creating lists, different kind of stuff, and creating those decks. Oh, the hours. And, oh, God forbid he gets an eBay account, that poor kid.
When
you
find out you can
buy cards by the single and you... Oh.
No, so, yeah. Thanks very much.
Yeah, no.
Icon for putting me down that rabbit hole. So, look, that was great. Right next to it, there was a whole bunch of learn to play other games. So they had a whole bunch of CCGs that they were being taught. There was a little board game selection there where you could go and play games or be taught by someone, which was fantastic. There was a massive video game area where you could either go and play something like Mario Kart or something a bit more shooty and stabby because there were a whole bunch of computers lined up. And it, just from a gamer's point of view, it had a bit of everything, which was great fun. I really enjoyed it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, Garth, did you have more to say about AICon?
Well, I did. My main point is walking away from it, Trent and I both mentioned how bloody inclusive it was.
Yeah.
You know, there were people of all shapes and sizes, all genders, all ages, all everything, some dressed up, some not, some, you know... Everyone was so damn nice. Everyone was so happy to be there.
Yes.
And it was fantastic to be in that kind of environment.
There's a reason why geeks and geek culture are taking over the world, because inclusive is one thing that we do.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason to be not to, especially in somewhere like we are in Tasmania.
Mm.
If somebody says, oh, I like anime, I'm not really into it, I like video games, you're the same damn person. Stop. Just regardless of the way you absorb that
it's
media.
It's just your vice, really.
Yeah, we're all one in the same. We've all spent way too much money on shash, essentially.
That was all. I just wanted to really do a shout out and say thank you to AICon for existing. I think it's a fantastic event. I hope you guys will join me there next year.
I think we definitely will.
It could be a thing. Now let's come back in just a minute or so and wrap things up on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh.
That was All About You by The Swoops, a Tassie band named after one of the best Transformers. On Edge Radio 99.3 FM with The Dice Men Cometh, this week brought to you by Good Games and their Endgame Cafe, opening on March the 11th, their grand opening. Now, Garth.
Yes.
We have a dice lady that we have on from time to time.
We do.
The very talented Tanya.
Yeah.
And she has a game that's on Kickstarter that she's done all the art for that's all what pretty and whatnot.
Yeah, she does art better than you do English.
I debate that.
So, yeah, look, just we've only got a couple of minutes left, but there is a new game by Bluebeard Entertainment, or Jellybean Games, which is The Lady and the Tiger. It's a little two-player bluffing game. It's only got about 18 different cards in it, all of which has the wonderful art of Tanya, who... Otherwise, people would know her as Dice Lady Tanya.
She's so talented, it annoys the hell out of me.
Yeah, and look, it's beautiful. We've seen the print and play, and we've seen the colour copies of this game. Hoping to get a look at the real-life version when Tanya is back in Tasmania.
Yeah.
She's doing a bit of work at the moment interstate. But look, the other good thing about this game is it is a whopping $9. And I think when you add shipping to it in Australia, it's a whopping $16.
Wow.
So this is a really small, good value two-player bluffing game, plays in about 10-15 minutes as well. So you can't really go wrong with that. And the ultimate thing is it just looks beautiful on the table.
And it's, you know, it's supporting literally one of our own.
Yes.
And guess what? It's already funded.
Indeed.
It's been up for a couple of days. It's already made 10 grand.
Yeah, well, it's doubled its funding goal. It was only going for five, and it smashed that already.
In a couple of days. So yeah. Well done, then.
Indeed. On the other side of the spectrum... there's this little game that we teased a couple of days ago, maybe a week ago, called Rising Sun. Have you heard of it, Leon?
I have heard of it. I think I just heard Trent yelling all the way from Adelaide about it. Yelling Rising Sun.
So this is Cool Meanie or Not's 26th money-making grab to just steal all the money out of your wallet. It's Eric Lang. It's Minis. It's
Blood Rage with Japan.
Samurais. Look, it's raised $1.6 million in about 2 days now, guys.
Yeah,
I know you mentioned before that you're on a couple of board game forums and board game things on Facebook.
I am indeed.
Has anyone been seeing the Board Game Geek Facebook page explode with Rising Sun love and or hate?
No, I haven't. But you told me about it earlier, and it quite disgusted me.
Yeah. So look, there are people from very extreme points of view on this, going all aboard the hype train. Doot, doot. Let's give this 10 out of 10. Let's make this the best game ever because it looks pretty. Versus all those old people who probably look like Mark who are grumpy.
Hey.
They're probably young and grumpy as well. But it's like, I'm not going to get on this train. This is like a really silly game and they're just milking and exploiting it all. And I'm going to give it one on Board Game Geek just because I don't like it anymore.
Get off my lawn simulation.
Something like that. And look, it made me think... these guys make a crap ton of money. These guys know how to generate a fantastic Kickstarter event. But when you then go onto Board Game Geek and see this game number one on the hotness and already getting 10-star review things for a game that people have seen a picture of.
Yeah, that's one thing we should probably get out of the way early. If you give a 10-star review to a game you haven't played, or if you give a 1-star review to a game that you even have played and you know it's not that bad but you're just being vindictive, if you do either of those things, please stop listening. Just not even joking about that. It's been happening in video games for a long, long time, and it's just ridiculous.
Well, so I mean, are there many, of course we didn't get one, but are there many review copies floating around? I mean,
it hasn't even been made yet.
But I'm guessing there's probably Arado, and there's probably someone else who've played these and have videos. Is there?
There's nothing. It literally hasn't been made yet.
So then how can people even be commenting about this apart from the look of it and that it's Eric M. Godland?
It's the very loud minority that are just they're being the internet is what they're doing.
Yeah, funny.
And
it's
just a shame that it affects our hobby as well as it affects every other walk of life.
Well, look, what it means is that, it was always going to be a massive success.
Yeah.
You know, people who buy Cool Meanie or Not games aren't just going to buy one. They're going to buy all of the games, Leon.
Well, I have not. I have not at all. I've not bought a single zombie side game because I don't like the look of them.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, but... they will buy the same style of game a lot of the time.
Yeah, but if you like that style.
Exactly.
But
there's absolutely nothing
wrong with that. But I'm not going to go saying, oh, it's the game of the year. I mean, I've only seen pictures of the damn thing so far.
So anyway, that was all I wanted to say in the couple of minutes we have. The game potentially looks like it should be really good. Using honour as a mechanism, let's hope that actually means something in the game and it's not just a different track that you're trying to, go up and down on just because.
Yeah, it looks like it is kind of like in Scythe. It's like if you, go around killing workers, it's not good for you.
No.
Because people don't like that.
So anyway, you don't need to spend your money on this game. It's already funded about 100 bajillion times. Leon will have a copy and he'll happily share it with you. So, you know, that was all. We go from one little $9 game with Lady and the Tiger to a behemoth in Rising Sun, too far into the spectrum with Kickstarter.
Yeah, and look, we had a huge Kickstarter section last week. There is so much happening on Kickstarter at the moment. Most of it is amazing. Yes. And, you know, look, it's letting games get to the light of day that maybe wouldn't. Correct. Otherwise, don't know whether you'd say that about Cool Mini or not. But look, thank you so much for joining us this week. We have been the Diceman Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Check us out on the social medias and we'll be back again next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey guys, it's Trent, Mark and Leon here. Just a quick little note after the show to welcome you all to a whole bold new era of the Dice Men Cometh.
It's a whole new world.
A new fantastic point of view.
Of trying to suck dollars out of you.
Give us your money.
So not only are we going to be welcoming a few sponsors on board over the coming weeks and months, we have also set up a Patreon page.
What's a Patreon page?
Look, it's a fantastic website, crowdfunding, but instead of giving you a product at the end of it like on Kickstarter, we just keep doing what we're doing and just ask for money anyway.
If you like what we do, chuck some cash at it. And it can be as low as $1. Can that be right?
That's right. That's
$1 right. A month?
We've set up a number of different
we're cheap.
Patreon yeah. levels.
We sure are.
And look, if you are gaming and podcasting on a budget, $1 a month is all we ask. You can sign up for the, what we've called the Tight Ass Imperium level. And look, I won't spoil it now, but there are other levels beyond that if you want to chuck us a little bit more per month. But all we ask is that if you enjoy the Dice Men Cometh, if you like the free content that we're bringing you courtesy of the good people at Edge Radio who let us use their studios.
And have done for the last 3 years.
That's right. Then you can maybe look after us a little bit and help us actually expand the show.
That's right. Disclaimer, none of this cash is going to go in our pockets. It's all going to go to fund us traveling to conventions, potentially some advertising for so we can get out and more people can know about us.
Some swag, maybe. We might produce more T-shirts or something like that.
Yeah, who knows?
It's just Australia's a big place. If you don't know, we're broadcasting from Hobart. It costs us money and time to get to more of the gaming conventions that we want to get to around the country. And we're convinced that we can grow this show by meeting more of you damn fine gamers.
So give us you can. If you can't, it's fine.
We love you still anyway.
Just look up the Dice Men Cometh on patreon.com and it's all there.
Check out our website for details.
You've been listening to another episode of the Dice Men Cometh, proudly sponsored by Good Games Hobart and their new Endgame Cafe. Find us on dicemencometh.com, Facebook, Instagram, and if you like what you hear, please support us on Patreon.